in the dialogue that we're having with the world around us, the mirrors are our way of knowing if our part of the conversation is what we really intended to say. If we believe, for example, that we're living in a tolerant, peaceful, and life-affirming way, on the one hand, yet we find ourselves in a world of war and suffering on the other hand, then the mirrors are a way for us to gauge and refine both the quality and the content of our conversation with the field that surrounds us. The field, once again, it's simply a mirror. It's a mirror of what we have become individually and collectively in our lives. While the way that we live our lives, day in and day out, is a language unto itself, ancient traditions invite us yet another step deeper into the mystery of our understanding of how this conversation works. Through their texts and traditions, they describe how we may consciously address this field, the ancient mind of God, at any time that we choose by focusing from within, by focusing our thoughts, feelings, and emotions in a way that is meaningful and understood by the field. We know that process today simply as prayer. In our previous Nightingale Conant program, Speaking the Lost Language of God, we identified the four modes of prayer that researchers recognize today. And I'll briefly summarize them for you here. The first mode that researchers recognize is what is called colloquial prayer or an informal prayer. For example, I have a friend on Friday evening coming home from the night shift who uses colloquial prayer frequently and says, "Dear God, if this one night you will let me get to the next Texaco station before my gas tank runs to empty, I promise I'll never let my tank get this low again." This is an example of an informal, colloquial prayer, something that we all do in our lives. The second form of prayer is what is called petitionary prayer, where we petition the forces of creation, the powers of God, to bring good into our lives. An example, "Mighty God, perfect healing now and in all past, present, and future manifestations." This is an example of a petitionary prayer. Ritualistic prayer is the third modality of prayer, and it's interesting how many people in our society believe that we don't do ritualistic prayer. When we use the same words at the same period of time on a specific day or a specific time of year, time and time again, that by definition is a ritual. "God is great, God is good" is a ritualistic prayer. "Now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep" is another example. The ritualistic prayers. The fourth modality of prayer, some researchers argue as to whether or not is even a mode of prayer at all. It's what we call meditation. Meditation often has no words at all and simply an awareness, a deep, sacred awareness of our relationship with the space around us and our relationship to ourselves from within. Well, all of these prayers, more or less, are prayers that are called prayers of supplication, with the exception of the meditative prayer. Supplication, where we feel powerless in a situation, and in our powerless state of awareness, we invite the intervention of a higher power or greater force. Well, in addition to the four modalities of prayer recognized by prayer researchers today, there's always been a fifth mode. And this is a mode that is used in many of the ancient texts and the indigenous traditions alive today. It is a mode of prayer where rather than feeling powerless in a situation, we recognize ourselves as part of the world around us. And in that recognition, we are given the power to participate in the events of our lives as they unfold. This is the fifth mode of prayer, the prayer that may best be described as feeling-based prayer. We're invited to feel the feeling in this mode of prayer, as if our prayers have already been answered, rather than feeling powerless in a given situation and asking for the intervention from a greater force. It's in this way that we participate in the processes of creation. From our experience with Tibetan monks in the high plateaus of Tibet, and the nuns and the abbots, and their ability to perform seemingly miraculous healings, to the native prayers of our own desert southwest, prayers of rain rather than asking for rain, feeling-based prayer is, perhaps, one of the oldest, best-kept secrets that illustrate our direct relationship with this field of intelligence that bathes all of creation, and the field that the ancient called the mind of God. To illustrate why the ancient instructions for prayer work, what I'd like to do is draw a parallel between our conversation with the field and the way it works in our lives and the way that computers work in our lives today, because in many respects, the function is very, very similar. In the computers of our world today, regardless of how seemingly complex those computers are, there are only three components, three general components to every computing operation. There's the hardware that sits on your desk or underneath your desk, the keyboard, the monitors, the CPU, the disk drives. There's the operating system, the language that interfaces with the hardware in you, and there are the programs through which we offer our instructions to the hardware itself. Well, in life, many scientists, many researchers now are beginning to see these parallels, and they're actually calling life a consciousness computer, a consciousness computer. And the parallels are striking. For example, in our electronic computer, we have hardware. In our consciousness computer, we have our physical world. In our electronic computer, the way that we access the hardware is through the operating system. In our physical world, the way that we access our world is through consciousness. Consciousness may literally be thought of as a form of an operating system. In our electronic computer, the way that we access the operating system is through the programs on your computer, things like Word and Excel, PowerPoint. These are programs through which you may interface with the hardware of your machine. Well, in our consciousness computer, the way that we access our physical world through consciousness is through thought, feeling, emotion. And when we combine these together in very specific ways, we create what we call today prayer. Prayer is the program that allows us to access our physical world through consciousness. The interesting parallel that many researchers now are drawing between these two ways of viewing our world is that in an electronic computer, the operating system is essentially fixed. If you have a computer in your home, the chances are very good that your operating system is maybe an IBM operating system or a Macintosh operating system. For all intents and purposes, that operating system is fixed. You are not changing the operating system itself. You change the programs that speak through that system to change the output in the hardware. Well, in much the same way, consciousness appears to be fixed. And I know this may be in direct conflict with what many people believe we're trying to do today, is people share with me how they'd like to change our consciousness. The consciousness, however, may be less about what's being changed and may offer the conduit, the consciousness, as the operating system is the conduit to our physical world. What we're changing is what's within us, our thoughts, feelings, emotions, and our prayers. So if we want to change the hardware, the output, what comes out of your printer, what comes onto your screen in a computer, the way we do is we change the programs. We change the Word or we change the Excel. If we'd like to change our physical world, rather than trying to impose our changes upon consciousness, we may access our physical world through consciousness, through our feelings and our prayers. A way to summarize and think about this is simply that prayer is to consciousness what a program is to a computer operating system. I think this simple metaphor is a very powerful tool in helping us to understand what comes next. Today, we find ourselves in a world where we are often inundated with visual and verbal images that challenge our sensibilities and evoke the emotions of anger and judgment within us, emotions sometimes that surprise even the most spiritually minded people. And the question comes up again and again, if in the lost mode of prayer, we are invited to pray as if the prayer has already been answered, to feel the feeling of peace and healing as if it has already come to pass, then how are we to pray positive prayers in the presence of the powerful emotions evoked within us by the world around us? Almost every day, we see images of hunger, suffering, starvation in places like Africa, the Balkans, the Middle East. Almost on a daily basis, we're witnessing attempts to eliminate entire cultures from the face of the earth through what is called ethnic cleansing and genocide in places like the Sudan of Africa, Kosovo, portions of Asia. Almost on a daily basis, we're still seeing efforts to deny even the most basic rights of existence to women in places like Afghanistan and other parts of Africa and the Middle East. Acts of brutality and violence and hate that defy the thinking of rational, loving people. So the question is, how are we to pray our positive prayers and feel as if our prayers have already been answered in the presence of such emotions? Well, in the language of their time, ancient traditions answer this question for us. They describe not only how to offer prayer, but in the highest orders of the most ancient traditions, we're left very precise instructions that describe how we may prepare ourselves for prayer before the prayer ever begins. This is something that we seldom think about in our tradition today. When we find ourselves in a tough spot in life, we immediately reach for the prayer. And while every prayer has its place and every prayer works for everyone, and prayer is a very deep and personal experience, and I'm acknowledging that, what I'm also acknowledging is that seldom in our Western experience have we ever been offered the insight in terms of how to prepare our minds to receive the benefit of the prayer. How do we prepare our hearts to find a place where we're no longer in the judgment or the anger or the hate or the rage of what life is showing us? And how do we prepare our bodies to receive the gift and the benefit that prayer can bring into our lives? Well, the instructions left by the ancients are very precise. They remind us, before our prayers ever begin, we must find a way to clear the anger from our bodies and our minds, to clear our judgments and our bias and our hate before we may effectively enter into the dialogue of prayer with the field around us. Through words that are both eloquent and simple, the Sufi poet Rumi alludes to this condition of peace and non-judgment in our bodies through his work. I'm going to invite you to listen to the single statement, feel the power of the statement in your body, as Rumi simply observes the place from which we may most effectively begin our prayer. In his own words, he begins, "Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right-doing, there is a field. I will meet you there." Let me say that one more time. Rumi reminds us that out beyond the ideas of wrongdoing and right-doing, there is a field. I will meet you there. Powerful words. What is he talking about? What is Rumi referencing when he speaks about this field beyond right-doing and wrongdoing? Well, in the traditions of the Sufi, he's talking about a place that is beyond judgment, a place where we may go in our minds and our hearts, where the rightness and the wrongness of whatever the world has shown us simply take on much less significance. While they still exist, we don't give them the same meaning. A place beyond judgment. So the question is, how do we get there? How do we get to that place beyond judgment when the world has seemingly shown us reasons to hate and judge, and often very good reasons? Well, this is where our computer analogy becomes so powerful. Because just as the memory of a computer must be cleared before a new program can be started, in a very similar fashion, our programs in the consciousness computer must be cleared of the charge, of the anger, the rage, and the hate before we may effectively begin our prayers. And the key to doing this in the traditions of those who have come before us is called the ancient gift of the blessing. The ancient gift of the blessing. Well, I know that we've all heard of blessing before, and to each of us, we have our own ideas of precisely what blessing means in our lives. So the first thing I'd like to do is begin by defining precisely what the gift of the blessing is from the perspective of the ancients and the way that we'll be invited to use it today. I'd like to define the blessing. Of the many ways that we can describe the role of blessing in our lives, one way that may be defined is simply as a quality of thought, feeling, and emotion that allows us to clear our judgments and our anger and our hate and our rage regarding a specific event in our lives. And it does so, and this is important, it does so without condoning agreeing with or encouraging the action that has caused the rage within us. It simply acknowledges that it has occurred. And I'm going to say this one more time. When we bless the things that hurt us in life, in our blessing, we are simply acknowledging their existence. And by doing so, allowing them to move through our bodies, we are not condoning the events. We're not agreeing with them or encouraging them ever to happen again. So to clarify this, the blessing does not condone or make any excuses for any atrocity or any act of suffering. Blessing may be thought of as an emotional lubricant. A lubricant that frees us from the emotions of the actions that we have witnessed, the things that have hurt us in the past. And to be effective, the gift of a blessing must address all parties involved. Not only those who suffer, those who inflict the suffering, and perhaps most importantly, those who witness the suffering, because we are the ones left behind when we see the events of the world unfolding before our eyes. So before accepting the gift of the blessing in your life, you've got to ask yourself a single question. And you've got to be very honest about the way you answer this question. You must ask yourself, am I ready to move beyond my gut response of an old belief that says that when something is wrong, there must be retribution for an injustice, or that someone must pay, or that somehow we must get even to right a wrong? You must ask yourself this question. And as you are ready to move beyond these old responses, it is the idea of retribution. It's the idea that someone must pay or someone must get even that locks us into the vicious cycle of the suffering and the hurt within our bodies to begin with. If we can find a way to move to a neutral place, a place beyond these emotions that have held us in the past, it is from that place of clarity and strength then that we make the choices in terms of where we move in our lives. So acknowledging the experience that causes the hurt or the suffering by blessing is a key that frees that emotion. It frees the charge. It frees the chemistry in our bodies to move through our bodies, to clear from our bodies, rather than to remain stuck in our bodies as the life-denying experience of frustration or anger or hate or rage. Well, for the ancient gift of the blessing, once again, we'll return to the Nag Hammadi Library in the Lost Gospel of Thomas. In verse 22, very, very powerful, powerful statement, where the teacher, when addressing the students, once again offers precise instructions in terms of how we find that place in our lives. So I'll invite you to listen to these instructions carefully. Bear in mind that these are 2,000-year-old instructions, and I am in awe of how well the instructions were placed then and how much sense they still make to us today. Because although they are obviously ancient, they are by no means obsolete. So I invite you now, listen to the words of the teacher as he is speaking to his students who have asked him, how do we move beyond the rightness and the wrongness of what we've seen in our world, beyond the things that make us hate and make us love? The teacher answers in this way, and he simply says, when you make the two things into one, and when you make the inside like the outside, and the outside like the inside, and the above like the below, and when you make the male and the female one in the same, it is then that you will enter the kingdom of my Father. Very, very powerful words. What has just been said? I think you get the idea of where this is going. When we can stop seeing the differences, when we stop seeing the inside and the outside, and the male and the female, and the right and the wrong, it's from that place where we can observe and recognize the existence. We're not saying to deny the existence of these aspects of our lives. Rather, we're being invited to observe them from a neutral position, to acknowledge their existence without buying in to the charge of the goodness or the badness or the rightness or the wrongness. That, he says, is when you'll enter the kingdom of his Father, the kingdom of his Father, the heaven. As we mentioned earlier in this program, is equal to the soul, is equal to the ancient name of God. The soul within us is the kingdom of heaven, as much as the heavens around us. And the name of God that lives in the cells of our bodies reminds us that we are part of both and all that we see. So we can move beyond the right and the wrong and the good and the bad of what the world has shown to us. It's in that moment that we are empowered to break the cycle that has led to the suffering in the first place. It is then that we're empowered to make our choices from a place of strength and clarity rather than the weakness that comes from our anger and our rage and our hurt. Does it sound too simple? Well, many of my audiences, I've had people say precisely that. They say, Greg, this is too easy. You can't just bless something and have it change the way you feel about your world. Well, I'm going to share a little experience with you because it is precisely this simple. It's as difficult as we choose to make it. I'd like to share with you why the blessing works, and it works for a very, very simple reason. The reason is this: because it is impossible to judge a person or an event or an experience in the presence of the blessing. You cannot do both at the same time. It simply will not work. Try it. Try it on your own. Bring to mind something that has hurt you in the past and feel all the anger and the rage and the hate or the frustration or the injustice around whatever that experience is, and then begin blessing the experience. And what you'll find is that in the instant that you are blessing, you cannot judge and bless simultaneously. When we experience something in our lives that hurts us, in that experience, there are always three components. Three components that must be addressed for the gift of the blessing to be effective. The first we mentioned earlier is those who suffer. Sometimes it's others, sometimes it might be you. Those who suffer are the first element that must be blessed in the gift of the blessing. And this is relatively easy. It's easy to bless ourselves or bless others when we see them having a hard time. The second element is the one that often challenges us to the core of our deepest beliefs about ourselves and our world and one another. Because for the blessing to be effective, we must also bless those who inflict the suffering. Bless those who inflict the suffering. Even for myself, I've offered this in programs for years. I've used it in my life. And this is why I can share it so passionately, because I know it works. I've had to use the blessing to survive deep emotional hurts in my own life, the loss of a parent, the betrayal of close friends and business partners and loved ones, the things that have hurt and disappointed me most in life. In recent months, I've used the gift of the blessing to help me get through the horrors that we have seen in our national media as a result of war and our failure to come to terms and to find a way to become greater than the differences that led to those wars. So those who inflict the suffering must be blessed as part of the blessing, and I'm acknowledging that often this is the greatest challenge of this exercise. The third and the final component, the gift of the blessing, and this is one that we often forget, is that we are invited to bless those who witness the suffering. If we're watching the 6 o'clock news, and we're seeing innocent children, civilians, maimed and losing their lives in a war, those are the ones that are suffering. And we're watching people involved in a military conflict who are carrying the weapons that are inflicting the suffering. There's a tendency often to forget about those who are left behind, those who witness the suffering, us. We're the ones who have to make sense of what we've seen in our lives and our world. The ancient Egyptian master, Thoth, offers us a clue as to the power that lives within our bodies. And he says that within each of us there is a darkness and a lightness, and we must find a place where they come to a balance in our lives. And when we feel those feelings coming in our bodies, he leaves us instructions in terms of how to determine what those experiences mean to us in that moment. I invite you now to listen to the words of Egyptian master Thoth, and bear in mind now that these are over 3,000 year old words. Once again, I'm in awe at how relevant that his words are to what we experience today. Thoth says to us, "When unto thee there comes a feeling drawing thee nearer to the dark gate, a feeling of anger, hate, and rage, examine thine heart to know if the feeling has come from within." So he's saying we feel that feeling well up in our bodies. Look at ourselves and try to understand if it's our feeling or if it's someone else's feeling that we are mirroring or that we're interpreting. If it is our feeling, he begins the instructions. And listen, if you will, to how eloquent these instructions are. These are the exact words, the translation from Thoth's message. He says, send through the body a wave of vibration, irregular at first, and then regular at second, repeating time after time until free. Start the wave force in thy brain center, direct in waves from thine head to thy foot. Wow, what is Thoth talking about? Listen to his words. Send through the body a wave of vibration that begins in our brain. He's inviting us to have a thought, and from that thought, to marry it into our feeling world and allow the waves of the feeling to permeate our bodies from thine head to thy foot. What is this wave that he's talking about? It is the wave of the blessing that allows us to move beyond the judgment, to move beyond the judgments that have hurt us in the past. Well, the key to receive the gift of the blessing is that it must be offered. It must be offered before we can receive it. So when we see something that hurts us, there are three elements, three components, and I shared them briefly. I'm going to share these again, and I'll invite you now to bring to mind someone or something, an event or a circumstance in your life where you may fill in the blanks with words that are meaningful to you. The first element of the blessing is I bless blank. I bless those who suffer. Into that blank, insert the name as specifically as you can of the person or the place, the experience or the situation that's hurt you in the past. I bless those who suffered, blank. The second portion of the blessing, I bless those who inflict the suffering, blank. I bless those who inflict the suffering. Think about those who have caused the suffering in your life. Maybe it's a supervisor or a coworker. Maybe it's a friend or it's a spouse. Or it could be a government or a nation. Once again, as specifically as you can, place the name of the person, the place, or the situation who's inflicted the suffering upon you within this blank. And the third portion, and most important perhaps, I bless myself in the witnessing. I bless myself in the witnessing. And you repeat this again and again and again until you feel a warmth in your body. Sometimes from the pit of your stomach, it radiates up through your chest and out through your body. And that warmth is you transcending the limitation of the judgment in your body. That is your body chemistry changing what that experience has meant to you. Don't be surprised if that warmth wells up into your face and your eyes begin to tear and you begin to have memories of all the times that these kinds of things have happened to you before, because that's part of the healing. Part of the healing. Let's take an example. Let's look at a global example, something that we've all experienced. The death, the suffering, innocent civilians in wartime. We are living in a wartime mentality in the last years of the 20th century, now the first years of the 21st century. So this is a broad, general example that applies to all of us to some degree. And we watch the 6 o'clock news. Many people that I've spoken with, not just in America, throughout the world, have simply stopped watching the news. They have disconnected because what they see hurts them so bad and makes so little sense to them that they cannot find a place to reconcile it, a way to make sense of it in their lives. Perhaps the gifts of the blessing may be a way to empower you so that you can look at the events of the world. You can see what's unfolding head on. Looking away doesn't make them go away. We truly choose to change our world. We must be a part of that solution. And acknowledging what's happened and changing the way we feel about it within our bodies, as we mentioned earlier, is literally the language that speaks to the intelligent field that surrounds us, giving way to the possibility that we are outgrowing the time of the war and the suffering and that we no longer have to experience those things. We must find that belief and that feeling inside of our bodies before it's mirrored in the world around us. So in our global example, what I'll invite you to do is simply when you watch the news, the broadcast at 6 or 10 o'clock, bless those who have given their lives. And you can say, these are my words, and I'm sharing them with you as an example. You replace them with your own words, words that are meaningful to you and within your family, so you can share this with your children. So in my example, the way I would begin this, I'd say, I bless those who've given their lives on this day so that they may know themselves in the giving of life. And I bless those who have taken life on this day so that they may know themselves in the taking of the lives of others. It's a hard one for me. It's hard. And I know it's something that must be done. I bless myself in the witnessing because I am the one left behind. I'm the one that has to make sense of the lives that are lost and of the beliefs of those who have taken those lives. I bless myself in the witnessing. And this, again, is one of those places where it sounds almost too simple. My experience has been that when something has hurt me in my life, and I say this once or twice, it seems as if nothing is happening. And I'll invite you not to give up, to keep going. Because it may take one or two or three times for the lubricant to begin to work. And this is one of those places where I can only speak for so long, and then my words will fail me because it's an experience you simply must have within your life. When you bless again and again and again, and you give names and specifics to the people and the places and the experiences that have hurt you, you will feel that emotion well up from inside of you. And when the experience is complete, you will feel different about what it is that has hurt you in the past and what it is that you've seen. That difference is the first step in your healing. That difference is the beginning of you allowing yourself to experience and view your world from a new and empowering way. The next morning, you may wake up and have the hurt once again, only it will hurt a little differently. And then this is your opportunity to apply the gift of the blessing yet another time. I'm going to invite you to try an example on your own. Through our magazine articles and news media, it's not uncommon to see the faces of people who have been affected by war in many countries throughout the world. The faces of women and children who are simply trying to live their lives and suddenly have no homes, no families, no place to go, and may not even have a country to live in any longer. When you look into their eyes, I'm going to ask this question, is it easy for you to offer the gift of the blessing to them? Most people find that it is. It's easy to bless those who appear to be helpless and in need. Now, at the same time, we are inundated with images of angry people in the streets of foreign capitals throughout the world holding banners and signs of those that we believe dislike our country and our way of life, that dislike us personally and have vowed to take everything that we love and hold dear. When you see those angry faces in the streets of those capitals come into your living room and your television screen, is it easy for you to bless them as well? Some people look at me and they say, sure, it's easy to bless everyone. Other people look at me and say, you know, it's not. It's not so easy for me to bless those who are angry and dislike me. And this is where your power begins. Because for the gift of the blessing to be effective, we must bless all who are involved in the experience, those who suffer and those who inflict the suffering. So in summary, our ancient gift of the blessing doesn't condone or make excuses for any act of atrocity or suffering that we see in our lives. What the blessing does, it is an emotional lubricant for the actions that we've witnessed in our lives. It must address all involved, those who inflict the suffering and those who witness, as well as those who suffer. Blessing is simply a way to clear the memory from our bodies, our minds, and our hearts of the anger, the rage, the hate, the judgment, the charge that holds us captive in our own anger and our own rage and prevents us from having our most effective forms of prayer. Following the gift of the blessing, we are now prepared to receive the benefit of the ancient gift of prayer.